Hello, and welcome to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
We love books so much that we use them to beat up ghosts.
Yeah, that's what happened. We didn't see ghosts and drive our governess insane when we were children.
No. We never had a governess.
No, we never had a governess.
Nah. this time around, we read The Turn of the Screw by Henry James, which is, like, a book with the coolest title ever that ended up, unfortunately, that was the coolest part of the book, in my opinion.
I mean, it's a great title, actually.
Great title.
Might have to steal that and put it on a piece of music I write that isn't good enough to live up to the name.
And you're like, I'm just doing it in the proud tradition of Henry James.
That's right.
And then a bunch of people go, so mad at you!
It'll be worth it. So we come to you today from what is probably the most book podcasty environment imaginable, sitting on a couch in front of a crackling fire.
So true. On a dark and stormy evening in a creepy country manor.
You know, it is supposed to be dark and stormy this evening.
It totally is, yeah. This is legit.
Our creepy country manor is an old walk-up apartment.
Could maybe still work in an old part of town. See, it'd really be better to be doing this at my house if we wanted, like, the creepy house. Even though my house isn't creepy.
Yeah, it's not really creepy.
Unfortunately.
Plus the dogs. But Ripley would scare all the ghosts away.
Well, I mean, Atticus already scares the angels away. So.
Well, they have two different duties. Atticus is on angel duty, Ripley is on ghost duty.
So, Scott and I recently moved into a home, I guess, for context, for people who, I guess, care at all about our lives. Whatever. But it was built in 1930, so we moved in. I was like, this house definitely has ghosts in it. But extremely unfortunately, no ghosts. I guess fortunately for me, because I don't want them ghosties in my home.
I think this apartment building was actually built around 1930.
Yeah. It's like a cool old house in like a kind of old area town. And I've like never... No, I did get the creeps the other night, but it was because I was reading a scary story at night in a room by myself. So, that didn't anything to do
with it. The only time I've gotten creeped out here is when Erica half-mumbled in a dream-sleep state, these are my angries. It's like, your angries? What the hell does that mean? And she rolled over and back to sleep. I was like, is she possessed by an adorable demon?
These are my angries.
These are my angries.
Every once in a while, Scott, in his sleep, will just say the most random thing in the entire world to me. And I'll be like, what was that? And he's just sleeping. I'm like, it's incredible.
All right.
So this book is the first book in a set of two for our Halloween specials. So I picked this up over the summer because I have an Audible account and I tend to go through these phases where I don't get anything for a few months, and then they're like, you have 4 credits. And I'm like, oh, fuck, I need books. So I was looking up good audiobooks, and they just released The Turn of the Screw, like, this year, I think, and it's narrated by Emma Thompson, who's cool. And people are like, yeah, her narration's awesome. I was like, well, I keep seeing this book on, like, scary book lists, and I, you know, it's... I guess it wasn't getting to be that time of year yet. I listened to this in, like, August, but whatever. I was like, I'm always up for the spooky. So I went ahead and got it. And then I told Ben he should read it. And then I decided that we should do a spooky follow-up and read another horror classic. I guess if you can call this a horror classic, a ghost classic. But to read Shirley Jackson's Haunting at Hill House so that we can do, like, 2 different types of ghost stories for Halloween.
Indeed. So,
and then he said, okay, because he does whatever I tell him.
I mean, that's basically true. I do it in, like, the most annoying way possible, but I do it. So on a scale of, like, Casper the Friendly Ghost to what's a ghost that's scary? I don't know. How about It? That's big right now.
I was going to say The Demon from Paranormal Activity.
Oh, well, there you go. The Demon to Paranormal Activity. From a scale of Casper the Friendly Ghost to The Demon from Paranormal Activity, how terrified were you reading this book?
Let's see here.
What would be the notch before Casper?
I know. I'm like, what's a... A good...
It's as scary as the annoying blonde kid that became Casper the Friendly Ghost.
It's like a... oh, fuck. I'm trying to... You know, like, Hocus Pocus. There it is. Like, the first 5 minutes of Hocus Pocus that's set when the witches are, like, alive and tormenting Salem or whatever. That movie is friggin' baller. So bad. That's how scary this book was. But it was not as enjoyable because it did not feature Bette Midler wearing amazing fake teeth.
True.
So fail on that, Henry James. Yeah, I will have to say I did not find the book very scary, which I guess we can talk about in a moment. Just to give everyone like a real, real quick introduction. So The Turn of the Screw is written at the turn of the century, I believe. Like 1800s to 1900s, not the millennium. By Henry James. And he's really well known for writing like literary fiction that you've probably read in English class at some point in your life. And so this is kind of a departure for him, but it's a ghost story, essentially. Like a haunted house story, kind of. A haunted kids story, I guess.
Yeah, it's actually, yeah, it's a little more in that tradition of, and actually I'm a little surprised I didn't see this in our conspiracy theory list, but like the maybe Miles is on the cusp of puberty and that's when, like Poltergeist and where she's supposed to start showing up.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And then it also kind of had hints of like, well, the kids in this book didn't really do it, but you're like, these kids are so innocent and beautiful and perfect. And then nowadays in a horror movie, those kids would turn into freaking demons.
Oh, yeah. There would definitely be possessed. Well, Miles arguably was possessed.
Yeah, that's true. He's getting a little weird there.
So. We'll cover that in the conspiracy theory
section. Yeah. But just like the very basic summary or idea behind it is this governess goes to watch these two children and their uncle, who's like a super weirdo, is like, yeah, you have to, like, go live in the country with these kids and take care of them and teach them. And I'm going to be, like, living in town. And basically, your only rule is you can never talk to me or send me letters about them ever. So she's just, like, living in this country manor with a couple other servants and the kids. And then, like, that's it. And she ends up seeing two different ghosts, one of a man and one of a woman. And after, like, poking around, thinks she learns the woman ghost, Miss Jessel, was, like, the kid's old governess, and that the male ghost, Peter Quint, was, like, the, what was it, like, chauffeur or valet or whatever.
I don't know. Some male servant classification that we're not wealthy enough to know about.
Too ignorant to know. And both of them ended up, like, getting fired because they were carrying on an illicit affair with each other. It was very scandalous. And then they both died. And
because that's now, what happens when you have illicit affairs.
Well, it is in the 1800s.
I know.
And so now she thinks, the governess thinks that they're haunting the children. And that's basically the plot.
Yeah.
The book.
Yeah.
So now you're all caught up. We're good. And it's a first-person narrative from the governess's point of view, except for the framing chapter at the beginning, which I did want to touch on. What did you think of this chapter? Like, before the story even starts.
I remember it being the part of the book that I probably enjoyed the most for the first 80% of the book, except I also promptly forgot about it. It was like a bunch of people telling stories and like, oh, I have one for you, but I have to wait for it to get here, and then I'll tell you.
Yeah,
I
gotta send a letter to get it sent here, and then
it was a little bit silly, honestly.
Yeah, and then like it got delayed, and then it was just like kind of like a funny like this is how people entertain themselves, and how The shitty mail system fucked him over. It's like, basically.
And the equivalent of that now would be like, guys, I found this great ghost story. Hold on, let me go. Oh, fucking Wi-Fi is so slow.
Yeah.
They'd like sitting around for 3 minutes looking at their phones while waiting for it to...
Rolling around. Yeah, my main impression of the first chapter, so like I said, I downloaded the book basically because Emma Thompson narrates it, but the first chapter was narrated by Richard Attenborough, because it's not her, like she was the governess, and so the book started, and for the first 10 minutes I was just like, who the fuck is this guy?
This is not Emma
Where's
Thompson.
Emma Thompson? This is bullshit. And then I finally figured out, like, oh, this guy's gonna get this narrative and start reading it, and that's gonna be her. But I spent so much of the first chapter just being mad that a dude was reading the book that I got kind of distracted, so.
So we talked about this with the Scarlet Letter a little bit, right?
Like, yeah.
This tradition, convention. Though I will say, this version of it was relatively short and kind of silly, actually kind of tonally at odds with what was to follow.
Yeah, but it is like, yeah, kind of a thing that you'll see in books of the time where they feel the need to be like, this is a story you're about to read.
I guess it's like the 19th century equivalent of when you go to a movie and it says, based on true events or inspired by true events.
Yeah, there you go. Just so you know. I would be interested to, like, kind of know what the, like, driving motivation behind that is. Like, why you can't just start with her telling the story. I mean, I guess in this one, if you think of, like, ghost stories, it does very much follow the vein of, like, let me tell you the story of, like, a person that I know where this thing happened to them. Because, like, they talked about that, with, like, urban legends and ghost stories and stuff. It's never something that happened to you. It's always something that happened to someone you know or happened
right.
to, like, a friend's friend.
So, yeah, it's always the third-hand retelling. This is the thing that really happened to a guy who went to school with my cousin.
Yeah.
Who lives in Illinois.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, maybe it's just kind of following that proud tradition of...
I wonder how far back that goes.
Yeah.
Probably as far back as writing was relatively cheap to publish. I doubt we have, like, an ancient Babylonian version of it or something.
Well, yeah.
It probably happened, honestly, but...
I'm sure.
We just don't have the examples of it lying around.
Say, like, probably in ancient Babylonia, though, instead of ghosts, it would be more like, oh, my, like, cousin's friend had an experience with this god who did this thing.
True.
You know, 'cause that's kind of...
More in the spirit of the time and place.
Yeah. So. So, here's a question. Thinking back on The Great Gatsby and our narrator, who is not a protagonist, do we think this narrator is a protagonist? The governess. The nameless governess.
The nameless governess. Well, it's unusual for a protagonist not to get a name.
Mm-hmm.
But... I think she is, just because she's...
Who else would be?
Yeah, it's like she's the only one we're kind of getting a complete version of the narrative from.
Mm-hmm.
And not just, I mean, I guess that's, you could say that's true with any first-person story, but like, the other people just aren't involved enough.
Yeah, when I first started posing that question, I was like, maybe not. But then now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, well, she's the only one we get any sort of really, like, interior life from. And she is, I mean, whether you take her as, like, a innocent woman trying to protect her charges or as a woman going slightly mad, like, either way, she's the one who's changing. So.
True, yeah. So, I mean, I guess then, pretty much by definition, she has to be
She
the
has to be the protagonist.
I'm trying to come up with a crazy outlandish theory on who else it could be, just to be silly. But, I don't know, Peter Quint?
Yes, he got his revenge on the family.
That's right. We watch his journey from young guy who likes to... bone young ladies to vengeful ghosts.
Who? Yeah. That's about it.
I don't know, yeah.
Apparently he has a super big potty mouth.
Yeah, that's right. Again, depending on which interpretation you like.
Yeah. So, what about the governess? Like, I guess, do you think about her?
Alright, so...
Would you ever take a job if you met your, like, potential employer and they're like, go to this place and then literally never talk to me again?
I don't know, like, what's the pay? It might be good. It's like, oh, they're not going to interfere.
Like, is this a huge... Like, when she finds out that Miles got expelled, I would have been like, I feel like this is a situation where the never talk to me rule should probably be ignored.
Well, that's another angle that you might see. And so there are just a couple moments during this book where I was thinking, you know, if this is a more modern story, I would expect one of the following tropes to happen. And one of them was the one you mentioned earlier about, well, these kids seem so perfect, like, they're definitely demons. The other thing would be, like, the strange uncle who I think it was implied our governess was maybe a little bit attracted to as well.
Yeah, yeah.
This, like, oh, well, here's, like, the hot, wealthy guy who's hiring you to do this job at this place, and except your condition is you can never contact me. He's definitely come back at the end of the story and be like the cultist priest or something.
Oh, yeah, totally. Like the reason behind the...
It's like, who is this ghost? Oh, it's him. And now he's cutting open the governess in the basement.
Yeah, good point. Solid point. Yeah, she... I thought it was interesting. Like, some of her... I thought, like, a lot of the stuff she did just, like, seemed pretty reasonable. But she made some of the strangest leaps of logic for me, where she's like, well, the children haven't at all acknowledged the ghosts whatsoever in any way, so clearly they are hiding from me that they can see the ghosts and talk to them. And I was like, but I don't, how did you, what? Like, and then there was some point later on, and I can't remember the situation exactly because it's been a few weeks, but like, where she was going to church and then drew some, like, totally out of left field conclusion about, like, the politics of, like, if she showed up to church or not and who would... I don't know. I don't remember now.
I'm recalling this scene.
Like, Miles, I think, was the only other one who was there, and then it turned out...
Didn't she end up meeting the others there, but that wasn't planned?
Yeah, it was something...
It was kind of a weird setup that, honestly, probably wasn't necessary to be included in the story.
So, I'm sorry, that was like a horrible example because I can't remember exactly what it was. But she did stuff like that several times where she's like, here's all the evidence, so here's my conclusion. And I was like, nothing you just said makes any sense whatsoever with the conclusion like you've just reached. Yeah. For me.
It was like one of those 2003 newspaper headlines where it'd be like, Bush administration says no evidence is evidence.
Yeah.
And then the next thing you know, we're invading Iraq.
Yeah. As opposed to 2017 headlines where they're like, Trump literally called Puerto Ricans lazy garbage. And then there's like a tweet where he's like, Puerto Ricans are lazy garbage. I'm like, oh, okay. He literally said that. All right.
Pretty straightforward.
All right, fair enough. So the governess's newspaper is from 2003, and I don't know if there's anyone in this book who's a newspaper from 2017, but...
Peter Quinn.
Peter Quinn. Tell it like it is.
With his evil eyes. No, the governess is a little bit prone to drama, perhaps, would be a good way to put it.
So there's one aspect of Emma Thompson's narration that I thought was really interesting... is, you know, most of the time she's just, like, reading along, doing her thing. But, like, in the scary scenes and stuff, she was clearly, like, reading it, like, oh my god, I'm terrified. And there were a couple scenes where she was talking to Mrs. Gross, the housekeeper, talking about, like, she's terrified and crying and stuff. And, like, she would actually be, like, getting hysterical and her voice is breaking and she was crying. And I was like, this seems a little extreme for the situation. Like... You saw a ghost in broad daylight chilling for 5 seconds. I mean, that would, like, shake me up, but...
Well, yeah, like seeing a strange man in the garden would be
scary.
That would be scary. And then honestly, finding out it's a ghost is like, ugh, is this going to be a whole thing? Like, just leave the china in the cabinets, all right, guy?
Yeah. So maybe I'm too judgy, because in that situation, maybe I would also be hysterical. But I guess it was because one of the big things is because those situations weren't scary to me as a reader, that when she hit those, like, fever pitches of drama, I was like, I don't understand why you're, like, freaking out.
Well, a lot of that drama was based on her... her leaps of logic, as you said,
I guess.
But it would be, oh, well, here's this, you know, this mysterious ghost creature, whatever it is, and, you know, like, how is it affecting these children? It's clearly only here to corrupt the children based on an idea I just had for no reason.
Yeah.
You're like, well, I mean, is that worth getting hysterical over? Also, she meets the children and, like, immediately falls in love with them.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, fine, maybe they're charming children, but she's so over the top in her praise of these children, that you can actually maybe start to see why a lot of readers think she's a little mentally unbalanced. Just because the reactions are so extreme to everything.
Yeah, yeah. And her extreme praise and immediate falling in love with the children is definitely what led me to suspect they would end up being total dicks.
Yeah.
And to be fair, Miles, a little bit of a dick.
A little bit, though it's hard to say if he is more... So let's separate these two things. So in actions, he's no more of a dick than maybe a clever 10-year-old child might be, I would say. In attitude, he's a dick in the unique way that only a aristocratic 19th century literary child can be.
Yeah. So if anyone remembers the Secret Garden episode and how obnoxious we found Colin, Miles is cut from the same cloth.
Oh, yes, he is. He is from the master race and the master class, and boy, does he know it.
Oh, yeah. In, like, a bad way. I'm the smartest. You can't teach me anything. I must go be with the other men. And then the governess is like, totally. And I'm like, true. What?
It's like, oh my god, I can't teach him any more math. He knows more math than me.
I'm like, this fucking 10-year-old.
Because you're a teacher and he's a 10-year-old?
Does not know more math. Stop it.
He got kicked out of school. How smart could he be?
Sounds like an idiot to me. Oh, but totally. Like, those... That one scene where she was talking about that, where he was just being this smug little... I have to hang around with these women who can't teach me anything, and this little girl, and blah, blah. And then the governess, instead of, like, slapping him, is like, oh, he's so much smarter and wiser, more lordly. And I was like, ugh. Ugh.
He's clearly a genius. He said he is.
That's, like, a big, like... In modern day literature, if a little boy was doing that, the governess would be like, shut the fuck up. You are so full of it. Get over yourself.
We may be friends by the end of this movie, but I'm going to take you down a peg or 12 first.
Like, shut up. You don't know what you're talking about. You're 10. Get out of here. Oh, Miles. Yeah. Yeah, and so, and then the whole time, like, so, you know, one of the inciting incidents is he comes home, he's been expelled. The principal of the school won't say why. It's just like, he can't come back. And then you, like, spend the whole book trying to figure out why Miles got expelled. Like, maybe he is bad, you know? Which is what she keeps, like,
right.
Maybe he did something really bad. I don't know. She, like, couldn't figure it out.
He was killing squirrels and doing weird rituals with them or something.
Yeah. And then it turns out that he... Well, it's very vague.
Yeah, he told people things.
Bad things.
Bad things. I told only the people I was close to, and then they told the people they were close to. And then snitches get stitches. Except that wasn't what happened. That actually even would have made more sense. If he, like, beat the piss out of the kid and told
him. Yeah, yeah.
Miles is going around and telling everybody what a vagina is. That's what I think happened, actually.
Yeah, then he just... And so, yeah, one of the suggestions is, so Peter Quint, this guy who used to work at the house, who is apparently not a great guy, one of the reasons he got fired, you know, Miles was buddies with them, and maybe he heard some frank and earthy language from Peter Quint, and yeah, then went around and told the other 10-year-olds what a vagina was, and the principal was like, well, we can't have that.
He's like, Peter used to say he was going to grab her by the pussy. And then the other kid was like, hey, you know, Miles says you can just grab him right by the pussy. And then, you know, they told one of their friends. The next thing you know, the headmaster's like, what? You can't do that. That's outrageous.
This is absurd.
No civilized society would let you get away with that.
I know all you rich boys think you can get away with anything, but that is crossing a line.
That's the one thing that crosses the line.
And so then he got expelled. And he was like, I was just repeating this locker room talk, Mr. Principal.
Mr. Principal.
We're getting very political.
Well, it's not like people who have listened to more than about 3 episodes of this podcast couldn't guess that's how we live. Since we're always going on about feminism and other SJW nonsense.
Do you have anything to say about Flora?
She's a tiny blonde angel, but is so much less angelic than Miles that we immediately lose track of her as soon as he shows up.
Yeah. The end. Who cares?
Maybe she knows more math than the governess, too. I like to think she does.
She's a Katherine Johnson. Yeah, whatever. Moving on. Whatever.
Next.
So Peter Quint and Miss Jessel, the former governess. So as I said, they got fired for carrying on an illicit affair. And like, I felt listening to the book, like the way they were painted was just like, so terrible.
Yeah.
But I kind of wondered, like, how terrible were they really?
It was like that very romantic era sort of, romantic Victorian era sort of thing of like, they were like dark in aspect and they had like mean little eyes and like shadowy faces and not like in the sense of, oh, I can't make out their features, but the way like they look evil.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, was it really just like, you know, Peter Quint was like, you know, a quote unquote like rude mechanical type and Miss Jessel was just like also kind of came from a low class, so they weren't like as, you know, aristocratic. And then they like had a relationship with each other, which is scandalous in that time period,
right.
And that's like really the worst of it. And that Peter Quint sometimes drank a beer and said fuck,
right.
And, like,
like one of those things that doesn't quite translate to modern society.
Yeah.
Where all the aristocrats in the region are like, oh, that Peter Quint and Miss Jessel, they're such a pair of Welshmen.
Yeah, like,
and we in moderns are like, so?
He acts like a normal dude, and she acts like every other, like, first grade teacher I know, so I don't get why this is a problem.
We put two unattached 20-somethings in a small space, and they started fucking each other. It was outrageous!
This is the worst thing I've ever heard! They tried to teach the children it was okay for them to do that.
Miss Jessel was clearly an amazing teacher. Those kids knew more math than their
parents.
Yeah,
like, come on, Miles is doing calculus. Like, fire Miss Jessel, come on. That's the outrageous part. Yeah, and then Mrs. Gross, who's a housekeeper, and my favorite, I guess I should save this for conspiracy theories, but whatever. I liked to think the governess and Mrs. Gross kind of had a thing going on. That's the only reason I really cared about Mrs. Gross.
They were immediately best buddies.
And they did a lot of like, oh, we like were clinging to each other.
True.
And stroking each other and talking into the night. And I'm like, what is happening with this? Like, just, I think, and I, again, I'm like 100% sure, like, Henry James did not intend it to be
right
at all, like, sensual. But like, just the way people wrote at the turn of the century, when it's saying, like, you know, or, like, we're, like, clinging to each other and stroking each other or whatever, and I was like, are you guys, like, making out? Like, what is happening?
It's part of how Maurice threw us off the scent.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Ian Forster read too many scenes like these, and it was like, hey.
And you're like, is this actually?
This is what you're describing.
So, yeah. I don't know, Ben, do you want to talk about any moral issues or, I mean, I guess we kind of, if you like are thinking of classicism, we kind of brought that up with how bad are the servants really?
Right.
Like from a modern aspect.
And the little Miles white privilege, last name unknown.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe we could pull more out as we go along. I think we should get to the conspiracy theories so we don't have to sit on them.
Okay.
So here we'll be silent for 3 seconds so I can insert the X-Files music.
No.
No, not really.
So
I just wanted to make you do that.
So the conspiracy theories is more like, so what's going on with these ghosts sort of thing? Like, so there are several different, like, approaches you could take.
Yeah, so, let's see. I guess the version... We were kind of... The plot version of the plot we were discussing, for the most part, has been, I think, the most straightforward version.
Mm-hmm.
Where there are ghosts. We don't know necessarily if the kids can see them. We're assuming the ghosts are bad and they're like trying to continue to corrupt the children here in the afterlife. So another version of that, probably according to the light googling I did, at least, I think the most popular alternate interpretation is that the governess is not completely sane and is an unreliable narrator, and maybe these ghosts aren't there at all, and she's the only one who can see them because she's the only one who thinks they exist.
Right. So the fact that, like, other people haven't seen them, and, well, Mrs. Gross straight up doesn't see the ghosts.
Right.
And then the kids, like, are kind of cagey, so you think, like, maybe they do and they just sort of admit it, but they never really admit it that they ever saw the ghosts. So there is this possibility, and the governess is kind of having these leaps of logic where she's like, well, not acknowledging the ghost is proof that they definitely were talking to the ghost.
Which is the logic of a crazy person.
Yeah, so, like, maybe she's slowly being driven mad for whatever reason by living, like, in this manner with these children, and she, like, totally makes the ghosts up, and she's the one who's, like, causing all this bad stuff to happen. And our friend Tony, who, if you've listened to past episodes, was on our past Shakespeare episodes, when I told him we were reading this book, he said, like, oh, yeah, I totally think that the governess killed Miles. And I was like, what? Because I kind of, you know, took it more straightforward when I was reading it. So I guess kind of part and parcel of this theory is that the governess finally, like, hits this point of madness and accidentally, probably, maybe deliberately, depending on how far you think she's gone, ends up killing Miles in this moment at the end. Spoiler alert, Miles dies.
Spoiler alert for a 120-year-old book. yes, another one of the theories out there, kind of a distasteful one, but one that seems fit a lot of the evidence. Is that Peter Quint and possibly also Miss Jessel were pedophiles, and that part of the reason they're clinging to these children is for unsavory sexual reasons, and also that the reason Miles was expelled from school is that he was not necessarily repeating coarse servant talk, but was actually talking about sexual things that someone his age should have no idea about.
Because he was potentially molested.
Indeed.
Yes. And then instead of going, oh, this little boy needs help, the principal was like, well, get out. Can't be saying those things.
Right.
I think that one is pretty interesting. when you just said, oh, this theory that they're, like, possibly pedophiles, I was like, huh. I mean, like, yeah. But then I think throwing in that little interpretation of that's the, like, the bad things he was telling these kids is from this knowledge of this, like, bad stuff that happened to him that he doesn't necessarily know is, like...
Yeah, doesn't even know it's bad.
Yeah.
Like, oh, here's a game I used to play with my friend.
Yeah. Because if you get screwed up at a young age like that and you don't know anything else, you might not necessarily know what the other kids don't. And then that was... Yeah. I think that's, like, fairly compelling.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting that that one... that's part why that one leaped out at me, even though the essay that it came from basically just says, Victorian audiences would have understood that these two were pedophiles without giving any further evidence. And it was, like, an essay about that essay where they gave that point about me. That's why I get kicked out of school.
I would like some more... more evidence behind that statement that Victorian audiences would have immediately known what was going on there, but...
This is more of like a cracked article conspiracy theory and less of like a paper you write for a class conspiracy theory where you actually have to back your shit up a little bit with research.
Unless someone can back that shit up.
Not that cracked doesn't do research, but you do less for a 3-paragraph item in a list than you do for... paper.
And it's easier to draw extrapolations from small moments instead of, like, so how does it fit into the thing as a whole? Are there other moments of it?
Right.
But, yeah. One, I guess, conspiracy theory, not about, like, what the ghosts are, but I read something extremely briefly about the Turn of the Screw, where someone said that it was the reason for all of the creepy children books and movies that followed in the 1900s, in the 20th century.
Makes sense to me.
Which I was like, I could see that.
Two perfect children who, their darkness is admittedly not that dark, from what we've seen. I mean, kind of going back to the earlier part of this discussion, but like part of the reason it wasn't that scary is because it's like, oh, Miles, like, this Peter Quint ghost is terrible because it's making Miles do terrible things. What terrible thing is that exactly?
Yeah.
He intercepted a letter to his uncle who asked you not to send him any letters.
Yeah. Or, like, left his room at night once.
Yeah, which, I mean, you probably shouldn't do, but
yeah,
at the same
like
time.
It's not, like, that terrible. Yeah. It's something, like, all little kids do.
Right.
That's not something that made me think a kid was possessed. I'd just be like,
right?
Get back into bed.
The only thing that really makes me think he was possessed is that he died at the end.
Yeah.
When the ghost went away.
Yeah.
So.
The ghost had a hold on him and...
I mean, that's probably the most supernatural part of the whole book to me. That Miles drops dead when the ghost goes away.
I don't know. It also felt very old story. Like... Oh, right. He saw a ghost and dropped dead of fear or something like that.
It's been a terrifying tale. Someone has to die at the end.
Yeah. Kind of thing. That's what it felt like to me. And, like, just, like, Flora's like, I don't want to see you again, and now I have the fever.
Yeah, it's fair, too, yeah.
It's very, like, that era of book.
You caught me in my ghost lie. Now I don't feel well.
Whatever, child.
That's like something that happened to a bratty... Bennett's sister or something.
Yeah. Lydia. Totally Lydia.
I have a fever because you don't believe me about the ghosts.
Shut up, Lydia.
Whatever.
No one believes you about anything. You're the worst. So there's something that you were talking about. I think you said you heard it from Monster Talk that I thought applied to this book, which is that old ghost stories, the horror was not so much what the ghosts are doing, but just simply that you have seen a spirit.
Yeah.
And that is the horror, and that was, like, enough, and then now it's like, oh, you see a ghost, and then a bunch of bad shit starts happening.
Yeah, and it gets, like, more and more gruesome as time passes on.
Yeah, yeah. Like, people are getting... tortured or killed or, like, that house catches on fire, like, you know, just something extreme.
instead of a spirit, or like the spirit being a harbinger or something, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be like this, you know, like, oh, I saw this ghostly woman on the stairs, and then like some terrible accident happens to someone the next day.
Yeah.
Like, that's more of an old school ghost story.
Yeah.
A modern ghost story would be like, oh, I saw the woman on the stairs. Oh, I saw her again a week later. And then the next time you see her, like, her jaw unhinges and she turns into a terrifying Lovecraftian tentacle monster.
Yeah.
And starts killing everyone in the house.
Yeah. Totally.
Oh, shoot. This is buried on a ghostly lady burial ground, and now we've got set something on the other side of the dimensional barrier.
Yeah, totally. But I thought that was interesting that it was, I wonder how scary, like, a lot of modern audiences think this book is, or if, like, the really big disconnect is just the way horror and ghost stories used to be told versus the way they're told now that makes it not as scary.
Yeah, I mean, for this to be scary, I think you could still do a story in this style and make it a scary story. I think it's harder to do it in writing. I think in a movie you could just have a
eerie,
creepy, eerie, tense environment and maybe have a little bit of a, like, psychological drama happening. I don't know. I'm almost thinking of, like, a stage play happening during the day and then just, like, the person thinking they're haunted when they're alone later in the evening.
Yeah.
There's not actually a ghost and nothing bad actually happens. It's just kind of them losing it a little bit. Like, a good director, I think, could do a lot with those ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll occasionally see, maybe not a whole movie, but, like, maybe a scene or two from a movie kind of like that. But to do it in writing, it's just really hard to set that up for a more jaded audience, because they're like, okay, we get it, there's a ghost, we recognize these tropes. It's always the problem you run into when you're reading something or watching something that's kind of the first example or an early example of something, because when you're, like, kind of creating, or at least, like, being the, if not the creator of the trope, like the person who really reinforces it, like makes it popular, you don't necessarily have to do it as well in some ways.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's, I don't know if this is the case of one that's, like, not, maybe it's not that it's not done well, maybe this one just hasn't aged gracefully. It's hard to say without having read more things in that vein.
Yeah, I'm interested because I have seen it on, like, recommended scary books before,
mm-hmm.
which is one of the reasons I, you know, in addition to the Emma Thompson narration, that I was like, all right, I'll give it a shot. So I was expecting it to be scarier just because I have seen, like, modern day recommendations for it.
Right.
So I would be interested to know from someone who's read it who, like, maybe did think it was scary. Like, why? Or, like, what your argument for it is. Just because, yeah, like, my main beef with it, I was like, it's fine. Like, the book's okay, but, like, the horror aspect of it just, like, totally did not hit with me.
Maybe it could be a little bit scarier if you were a little more empathetic than we are. Like, you kind of put yourself in that position. What would it be like being a young woman going to this place by myself? Whereas I'm like, yeah, okay, I've seen this setup before. What's next?
Yeah. It was kind of like earlier, I was like, I guess if I was in this country house and saw a ghost, I mean, I'd probably be pretty freaked out too. As opposed to just being like, get over it.
Get over it. How does it compare to something like Dracula, since we've already referenced, like, 12 episodes we've done before? Like, was that scary? I think we were bored by that one.
Yeah.
That's my
I don't really remember being scared by Dracula.
Like, there was a little bit of tension, I think, when they went to his place in England.
Yeah, there were a couple of good moments. I feel like there were some good scenes or moments in Dracula.
Yeah.
But it was just kind of, like, a lot of it was kind of like, meh. Frankenstein, is not really, I would say, supposed to be, like, a horror.
No, I wouldn't even put it in that category, honestly.
I was just trying to think of, like, older books with monsters in them.
Right.
I believe that Mary Shelley could do it, because of these three that we're talking about, Frankenstein is probably my favorite.
Yeah. I think one of the little essays I've come across in the last week or two referenced Jane Eyre. Not, like, just in terms of being, yeah, like, that kind of early pseudo-horror ideas and tropes.
Well, I think we talked about that in Jane Eyre, is that there are, like, a lot of the setup of that is almost set up like a gothic,
yeah,
scary house book with, like, these mysterious things going on and this, like, creepy brooding dude, and then it just turns out Mr. Rochester's super crazy and, like, locked his wife in the attic. Nothing supernatural about it, but
nothing to see here.
It totally does, like, yeah, set up some of that. Or even certain elements at the beginning of The Secret Garden,
yeah,
has a couple of little hints again, like, what's the secret of the house?
Right, this big old dusty house that only a couple of people are rattling inside, and the master is withdrawn or absent.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's definitely like a...
I know what would be pretty contemporary with Turn of the Screw would be, like, Hound of the Baskervilles.
Yeah. Haven't read that one.
Which also, I think, has a lot of that kind of, like, gothic stuff going on, though, you know, it's Holmes, so they figure something out.
But yeah, that it was not actually supernatural. Yeah, so M.R. James, 1862 to 1936 would have been pretty contemporary. Mm-hmm. So M.R. James wrote Ghost Stories, and the one actually, I said I got creeped out in my house the other night. The Mezzotint is this short story I read the other night that written by M.R. James. And I thought it was pretty creepy. Short story, it's just this, like, dude working at, like, Oxford or something. And he collects these, like, mezzotints and other things. A mezzotint is like a what's the word I'm looking for, like an old school picture, but it's not a photograph.
Okay.
It's like a something kind of similar to that, basically just like photos of landscapes and houses and things like that. So he collects that kind of stuff for this, like, little museum. And this one guy's like, oh, you should buy this one. And he's like, well, I mean, like, I'll take a look at it. So he, like, orders some to check them out to see if he wants them for the museum. And this one in particular, he's, like, super unimpressed by it because it's, like, pretty boring. It's just of this house and, like, wasn't taken artfully. And he's like, why does this cost so much money? And then, like, every time he goes back to, like, show it to someone to see what they think, there's, like, a little bit of something that changes about it. So he's like, there's no one in this picture. Like, why would it cost this much? And his friend's like, oh, it looks like there's kind of, like, the hint of a figure right there. And he's like, oh, yeah, it looks like there's kind of, like, an obscured person. And then, like, the next time someone looks at it a few hours later, when he brings it up again, like, the figure is, like, more in the frame and a little clearer. And then, like, he looks at it again, like, late that night, and the figure's, like, full onto the mezzotint and, like, bent over backwards in this, like, super creepy position, creeping toward the house. And then they look at it the next day and, like, a door or window in the house that was closed the night before is open, and there's no sign of the figure. And, like,
yeah, that's a little creepy.
I was like, this is kind of creepy. And then he, like, does some research and finds out that, like, yeah, this, like, poacher had been caught and hanged for poaching on the land, and then, like, a few months or whatever after this guy was caught and hanged, the master's son disappeared, never to be seen again. And so his theory is that he, like, basically witnessed this guy going and, like, stealing this,
yeah,
kid. And I was like, gave me a little...
Yeah, a little bit of
a little chill. A
little of the willies.
But I think that maybe that's a good example of, like, something kind of written at the same time in very much the same language as The Turn of the Screw.
Yeah.
Kind of set up in the very same, like, pretty banal, like, manner of, like, this... like, dude in his, like, professor buddies, like, being white guys. Right. but did end up, like, successfully, like, gave me the creeps in a way that the Turn of the Screw did not. So.
Yeah, so I guess the argument there is that the, like, style of it doesn't necessarily have to keep it from being creepy.
Yeah.
All right, well, any other, like, little points of interest or conspiracy theories that we haven't mentioned yet?
I don't think so. I think that's everything I got.
All right, so we got any questions?
Any questions?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, I guess any of my questions would be related to the stuff we were all just talking about. Are the ghosts real?
Yeah, right.
How bad was Peter Quint? Like, how sinister was this fella? Kind of thing.
Yeah, that's the main takeaway, because we've really, in this discussion, put Peter Quint anywhere on the spectrum from, you know, just a lower class fellow, all the way down to child molester.
Yeah. So just, like, pretty innocent lower class guy to, like, completely horrible criminal monster.
So, Peter Quint, if you are, in fact, just a dude, we apologize.
And if you're not, then fuck you.
Yeah, then die twice.
So, what's your verdict?
You know, even though it was pretty short, I struggled pretty hard to get through it. More because it just wasn't that interested then, because it was hard, I think. So, kind of middling for me. I really would not particularly recommend it to someone who's looking for a classic horror tale, looking to be scared, or looking to get, like, oh, the interesting first version of Trope X or anything like that.
I'm kind of the same. I didn't have any problem getting through it, because I just listened to it on, like, a few different walks. It was pretty short, but yeah, I was mostly just disappointed, because, like, I've been meaning to read it for a while and it wasn't as scary as I had hoped, so I'm kind of the same. I would be hesitant to recommend it to anyone to read unless someone with a good, like, English degree or, like, English class experience could really sell me on, like, why it's better than I think it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like the kind of thing that I would say the only circumstance where I would really be that interested in reading it would be, like, a history of horror literature class or something, where there's a lot of context and a lot of chance to understand what you're actually reading.
Yeah, this is... It's interesting, because sometimes when we read classics, we're like, oh, I didn't really have a very good time reading it, but once we started discussing it, I noticed there was more stuff going on than I had thought, and that's pretty interesting.
Right.
And this time, I think there's not as much going on, which, I guess, apologies if someone is, like, losing their minds listening to this right now.
I wrote my dissertation on this
book. Or there's a lot going on that, like, that the two of us are just not getting.
Right.
In which case, yeah, I would not recommend someone read it unless they were going to do it in a situation where someone could give them that context.
And if you are that person who is just dying because you have that context, please get in touch with us.
Let us know.
I mean, I don't promise that we'll have another discussion about this book, but maybe we can read something else that you're smart about and we're not.
Yeah, leave a comment. So if you want to get in touch with us and let us know why we're wrong with the Turn of the Screw, or why we're right, you can drop us a comment on our website at www.novelideaspodcast.com.
You can tweet us on the Twitters,
yes,
at Novel Ideas Pod, which is me, mostly. Well, entirely, but
yeah,
Gabs will find out eventually.
I mean, I look at it.
Yeah. Or at Classic Sum Up is Gabs.
Mm-hmm.
That's entirely Gabs. I won't see that.
Yeah, no. You can find us on Facebook. I believe we're just facebook.com/novelideas.
And of course, comments, reviews, whatnot, iTunes, which I don't know if anyone's ever done that.
Well, we have reviews on iTunes from like years ago when we first started, but
I
will say
don't
that
I don't even know if I know how to check that.
I was in the iTunes podcast library looking for new podcasts to listen to, as I do from time to time, and they were like, here's some of our curated content, and one of them was like Book Lovers or something like that, and I was like, huh. So I clicked on it, and pretty much everything on the list was something that I had found on my own that I had tried to start listening to because I wanted to listen to podcasts, kind of like novel ideas.
Sure, yeah.
And just none of them quite did it for me. A lot of the book podcasts out there, and I mean, granted, a lot of them are really well done. This is not an insult to, like, the professional book podcasts.
Right, yeah, we're...
But they, a lot of them will be like, oh, like, we're going to talk about book news, or we're going to talk about, like, three or four different books that just came out, or, like, not really very many people just say, like, we're just going to talk about a book, or something like that. There was this book podcast I loved called Literature Lab, where they had, like, academics come on and discuss in-depth, like, basically their specialties. So they might talk about one book or they might talk about a genre or whatever. It was so cool, and then it's no longer. And it made me really sad. But anyway, I was looking at this list of all these books in this, like, specially curated book lovers podcast group, and I was like, I've either already listened to these and didn't really like it, or, like, it wasn't my thing, or I'm not interested. And then I was like, novel ideas could be part of this. If only we had enough listeners to compete with the Slate Book Podcast or the NPR Book Review Podcast.
Good luck with that, us.
Okay, that's never going to happen.
Well, what about a podcast who wants to hear two siblings having basically a book club? That's kind of our niche, right?
Yeah.
We're a little more book clubby, and we have a little... We try to... One of our goals. Shoot, maybe this is one of the things you guys can communicate to us on whether we're doing a good job. Like, we try to touch on some of the points you would definitely cover in, like, a high school class if you were reading that book. You know, Gabs does have an academic background in this.
I do.
And it's basically a combination of, like, well, what if it was, like, you were having a book club where you're discussing the book you had to read in class, but you also got to say fuck sometimes. that's more or less how I would describe us. So yeah, if we're not doing a good job on any of those aspects, you can let us know that too.
Yeah, I just really want a podcast where I can call little boy, like, that little boy was an asshole.
Oh, boy. Because you certainly do that. So, maybe this is dangerous that reference material's at hand, but what are you reading right now? Well, I guess you just said you're reading that M.R. James thing.
Yeah, I have another M.R. James story that I just started reading. So I'm going to see if that one's creepy too. But I'm also reading this book, excuse me, called The Girls by Emma Klein. And I seem to recall when I was working at Barnes & Noble last summer that it was on the New York Times bestseller list. And I seem to remember selling a fair number of copies of it. So it was like a big thing for at least a little bit. And I'm a member of another book club. Where I do not have a say over what gets chosen, and this was selected for this month, and I started reading it, and I cannot stand it. So it's a big not recommend for me on the best-selling book front.
So I just reread Watchmen because I had a conversation about superhero tropes recently, and possibly ways to subvert them, and then I realized that, like, every single one we could come up with had been done at least a small amount in Watchmen, so that seemed like a good place to go.
Probably done better than you do.
Probably. Just for old time's sake, to recall that episode for a minute, when the guy at the paint store wants to choose a shade of paint for his living room, who swatches the Swatchman?
Indeed.
And I don't have the book at hand. But I have been reading an anthology of like space opera short stories that was put out in the early 2000s, like definitely probably about 2004, 2005, because none of the little author bios before the stories go past that. And I cannot for the life of me remember who edited it off the top of my head, but some pretty interesting stuff in there. It's one of those things I'm reminded of every time I read a science fiction anthology. They're always like 1,000 really interesting, quirky ideas in those because they don't have to spend a whole novel.
Yeah, right.
It's like the craziest thing they think of and throw it on the page.
Yeah, totally.
I tend to enjoy it.
I am hoping to pick up the Obelisk Gate this week.
Oh.
Almost done unpacking my books. And then reading The Stone Sky.
It's a pretty safe bet The Stone Sky will be appearing in this feed at some point.
Yeah.
I might have to go back and reread The Obelisk Gate and reread The Stone Sky by the time that happens. We'll see.
I'm working on it.
I'm not complaining. So I think, let's see, next time around, this episode might happen before Kindred, just to stay in October with the Halloween-y stuff.
Yes, yeah, so, I mean, the next episode would be the Shirley Jackson book, since those two go together. So Haunting on Hill House,
yeah,
be the next one.
That'll be the next episode. And if Kindred wasn't the one before this, it'll be the one after this.
Yeah.
Or not after this. After the... Or Haunting and Hill and House are on the title, and I keep rearranging them even when Gab said it 10 times.
And if you haven't heard Kindred yet, oh boy, are you in for a treat.
That's right.
Listen to some white people try to talk about slavery.
Yeah,
it's a struggle.
Yeah, we do a real good job, I'm sure.
We are extremely highly aware of how white we are in that episode, I think.
It's a very nuanced discussion that basically goes like this. We both think slavery is bad and we're scared to say anything else.
And then it's me going, I read the cool essay at the end of the book, and I'm going to say what all the stuff this guy said.
All the smart stuff this person said.
Because I don't, can't, no. Yep.
So I look forward to that, but I think that's all this time around, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.